is Luann Aiken, Garden Ambassador of Tagawa Gardens. Now let's get to the heart of it, where we explore the horticultural topic of leaf scorch. Hello, Luann.
Good morning, afternoon, wherever we are. Hello, and how do you do?
I'm good. I'm good. Y'all, it's morning. That's okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So can we tell folks what leaf scorch really is?
Leaf scorch is a distortion, a discoloration on leaves of primarily trees, but it can easily affect shrubs. I've seen that too. And the outer margin of the leaf will get tan or brown and almost parchmenty in appearance. Sometimes it can appear as black spots, dark spots between the veins of the leaf tissue. Down here on the Front Range, Tagawa Gardens is in Centennial, just south of Denver. So we're definitely that front range kind of high and dry part of the world. And I see the leaf scorch, the margin distortion and drying far more often than I see the dots, the black dots. But once you see it, it's hard to miss. And I know CSU has a really good handout with some pictures on leaf scorch, so people can get a really good sense of what we're talking about. At TagawaGardens.com, I just did a blog about 10 days ago one of the good things about that is it shows pictures again, some different pictures than what the CSU handout has. So people can get a better sense of what we're talking about. And if it's not a disease, it is not infectious, it is totally an environmental condition. And I'm not blaming anybody, but there's all kinds of reasons that it happens. Primarily, we find at Tagawa's, and people all of a sudden start bringing in their leaves, and we have a diagnostic area of the garden center. But it hit fairly quickly that we were getting a lot of responses, a lot of inquiries. And it is that marginal discoloration, that parchment color right around. It almost looks like it's a painted on border sometimes.
Right.
And we were really seeing a lot of it within the past. So this is, we're in a little bit third week of August now. We started seeing it right in early August when the heat kicked in. The monsoons for us never really materialized. Sadly, I know you're up there bragging about your 2 inches of rain. I'm trying not to be jealous.
Well, yeah.
But it all stems from root damage, as you know.
Yes, the roots don't have enough water to absorb from the soil, and so it's burning the edge, the margins of the leaves, and you know, all kinds of things happen. You know, there's no photosynthesis, there's no chlorophyll production when that happens, and usually in trees like lindens, who are sensitive to, you know, extended periods of drought, those are the trees that people should, if you have one, put it on their list. And we consider an extended drought 10 days of no,
without any precip.
Yeah. Without any precip. And, you know, those warmer temperatures. So if that starts to happen, you can stop it before it starts and, you know, deep root water your tree.
Right. Right.
You know,
some of the reading that I have done really points back to not just not watering in the summertime appropriately, but failure to winter water. Mm-hmm. And the idea is, I remember way back when I was in Master Gardener school, you know, we would do our volunteer, you know, answer the phone call and try to help people. And when we would get a tree, especially a tree question, one of the first things we'd ask is, did you winter water? And back then, so many people would say, what's that? Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're hearing now in the Master Gardener offices, but I think people are getting smarter, but we still have a long ways to go. Winter watering, meaning when the ground is permeable, and you can test it with a screwdriver. So that's usually going to be in the morning when it's not covered with ice or snow. Get that short sprinkler out there. We're not suggesting at all that you fire up your sprinkler system, but get that little frog eye or some small sprinkler out there, mm-hmm. That you can move around outside of the drip line of the tree, meaning the outer margins of where water would fall off of that tree if it was wet. And make sure that you're getting that water down there What does the extension say about an inch a month if we've gone a month without a good soaking snow?
Well, if it's an established tree and there's no
Right.
snow, it's it's 4 to 6 weeks,
Okay.
six being the ideal thing, but for an established tree. And if it's younger, it's less, it's four. So
Okay. And there comes a point where you can't reach the feeder roots of that tree
oh yeah.
because the tree is so big.
Yes. Well, but you do the best you can,
Yeah.
and then there's a formula that per inch of the diameter of that, breast height, is 10 gallons of water. So if you have a tree that is 10 inches in diameter, that's 100 gallons. That's a lot of water.
A lot of water. That's a
And
lot of water.
it depends on, humidity, it depends on temperature, it depends on precip, it's just,
Wind.
yeah,
Yeah.
wind, those temperatures, it just depends on a lot of factors as to, okay, well, when's the next time I have to do this? And I tell people, check your soil, and watch the weather, watch for your precip, and then decide. And if limbs are brittle, they tend
Right.
to break off easily. And if they're turgid, which means they have enough water in them, they can take that extreme wind. So that's one thing that they can watch. Because people tend to, overdo and, go back to the tree and say, oh, I this month and this month and this month. And then they become dependent upon getting that water. And when it stops entirely, then you
Right.
see a huge difference in what's happening. So,
And one thing we should probably clarify is that when you winter water, make sure it will permeate. So again, that's where the screwdriver or trowel or something kicks in that way. But what happens when you fail to winter water specifically is the trees are dormant, but that doesn't mean they're just totally shut down at all. And so those roots are still kind of, percolating along, trying to do their job and support the upper growth, even if the tree is completely leafless. And certainly if it still has a needles, this affects conifers as a kind of a needle scorch in a way. But when they dry out, they dry from the tips, the root system dies. Trees especially have an enormous ability to store food. And so the tree may leaf out. I remember these calls all the time on the Master Gardener line. They leaf out in May, June, they're fine. And then the heat kicks in and they just crash. And so the tree has done everything it can it could to make a good start. But when that heat kicks in and the tree demands the top growth demands more and more water, the root system just isn't there in its full glory to support that upper growth. And so things were fine, 2 weeks ago, and they're not fine now. And that's directly from winter watering the vast majority of the time.
And I always tell people, the tree is responding from something previous, not now. And so you can't see those roots over the winter, and you can't see them in the summer underground to know that there's not enough water, but because you're not getting enough rainfall, you're not getting enough snow, and does have to happen on a regular basis.
Right. It leaf scorch is different than sunburn, which shows up more as kind of a pale blotch often, in the middle of the foliage somewhere. And that's a different, that's not the same thing as leaf scorch. It's more of a function of how that leaf tissue is responding to the sun and the heat. We really want to emphasize that it's not infectious. It's not a disease. You don't want to go out and fertilize it a bunch and try to compensate. Get it analyzed, or look at the pictures either on the CSU handout or the Tagawa Gardens blog. And just figure out visually, or Google it, you know, good old Google. Google what is leaf scorch, and you could even Google what is leaf scorch on that particular plant. What does it look like? Because it can kind of change appearances.
Right. Well, and elm leaf scorch tends to happen from the base of the tree on up. In oak leaf scorch, there can be a scorch, an actual scorch with the leaf, or it can be bacterial. And if people don't know the difference, then CSU Spur Campus has a lab that they can send you to make sure. Yeah.
The other things that can affect the health of the root system, aside from failure to winter water, are construction work, where the roots have either been compacted or cut for whatever reason. Tilling too close to a tree can cause damage. Anytime you're really compromising and stressing that root system, then leaf scorch becomes a real possibility, depending on what the weather is that you're facing at the time.
Well, that's key. I mean, those roots, without them, every plant depends on those roots.
And they're not asleep. They're doing their job in the winter, and they're really doing their job in the summer. So,
No,
you
no.
know.
And, if we have an extended drought and, there hasn't been rain, it usually takes, and this is based on research, that by the time you get to the third rainstorm, and they have to be pretty frequent after a drought, it really breaks through and penetrates the soil. Otherwise, it just runs off. And so people are misguided in thinking that, okay, we've had, let's say, half an inch of rain, especially in our heavy rains now that just come down and run. If we've had that extended drought, it's not necessarily going to penetrate. It'll be the second and the third time that it actually really, really penetrates.
The more moist the soil is, given a little bit time to absorb it, the next round, if it comes fairly quickly, will go deeper. It won't just sit on the top with, you know, surface tension and such. What is your take on root feeders for watering trees?
Well, there's a debate, but I've talked to the state arborist, and they're good. They're actually good. It puts it right where the water needs to be. That doesn't mean that you take it and push it all the way down, which a lot of clients have done that. I mean, it's 8 to 10 inches. Leave it at 8 to 10 inches, and follow the instructions on that root feeder. And if it says leave it there for 20 minutes and you're delivering X amount of gallons of water to that section of the tree, do that. And then keep moving it all the way around. Or if you can't move it all the way around, let's say there's a curb that impedes the roots on one side, then just water wherever you can.
And people often ask, you know, how long should I water? And it's like, I don't know. How much water pressure do you have? So, simplest thing, take a bucket, turn it on full speed, turn and measure how long it takes to get a gallon, 2 gallons, and then you know what you're delivering when you actually get out into the yard with the hose and the soil needle.
Every piece of equipment's gonna make that a little different,
Another thing to watch for people who are having problems is, especially if they're in have moved into a landscape that they didn't create, is black plastic. And so a lot of homes that have black plastic under mulch, could be often gravel mulch, check it out. Get that stuff out of there, or at the very least, poke a bazillion holes in it. If you, for whatever reason, you know, whether it's physical abilities, can't do that, can't remove everything, just poke as many holes as you can. Compromise that black plastic as much as you can, not just for leaf scorch, but for every other thing that benefits those plants, you
Well,
know.
it's not just about the weeds, because most people do it. It's a nice look, and I don't have to weed that, and it's a maintenance thing. But CSU has researched that if you put gravel on top of that fabric, it mitigates the amount of oxygen getting into the soil. So roots need oxygen as well. Photosynthesis needs oxygen. I mean, so I tell them, and they usually wrap it right up against the trunk where it can stay wet all the time and rot the bark. And so I do the same as you. Remove it. Just remove it.
If you can get it out, if you can afford to pay somebody to do it, your plants will thank you. Well, one other note I want to make sure that we include is that if you have a tree growing in or very close to your lawn, what you're giving your lawn in watering is not going to support the health of that tree. So this is over and above. This is the cherry on top.
Well, you don't know how many clients, when I say, how much water are you giving your tree? And their first answer is, I water it when I water the lawn. And then I explain the difference in root zones. And then, it starts them thinking, maybe they're only getting 10% of what you gave the grass that's filtering down, if it should filter down that far,
Right. Which depends a lot on the soil, too.
Absolutely. And that's another thing. Ask a client, what kind of soil do they have? What do you mean? And
It's
I,
dark.
yeah, no. I tell them to do the mason jar test. And that's a simple thing to start off with that they can
Want to
manage.
explain what that is?
Oh, well, you go and you take dig down and you take a sampling, and you take like a cup of soil and you put it in a mason jar. It doesn't have to be a mason jar, but a
Yeah, anything
jar.
clear,
Yes,
right?
anything that you can see through. And you put that in there and you put water like three quarters of the way up from that, and then you put non-sudsing soap that's from your dishwasher, and you put a tablespoon in and shake it up and put it on the counter, and it'll settle out. The layers will settle out
Based on gravity.
based on gravity. Yes. And then you mark on the outside of the jar, sand is here, loam is here, and clay is up at the top. And the percentage will show, if it's like 3 inches, and then you have like half an inch of loam, and then you've got a quarter inch of clay. Well, with dominant structure, that soil will be affected by sand.
And it's really amazing to me when you do that, how very distinctive those layers are. It's not, kind of or margins that are a little indistinct. No, they're right there. You can
Yes.
tell.
Yeah. They sort themselves out within, 15 or 20 minutes. It's done. And that's the easiest thing. And then, if they have questions, they can call the extension office. But, that's the quickest way to understand your soil. And, if you built a new house, you're going to have soil that's been brought in. So I would test that soil. And, front yard, backyard. And the front yard can be slightly different than the backyard.
Yeah, you don't know
So,
what the backfill has been.
yeah, exactly. And it's usually not great soil. So you have, things that happen. I planted this tree and we built this house 2 years ago and it's still struggling. Well, you always have to marry the right soil with the tree that needs that soil type.
And you mentioned linden trees that are susceptible. Aspen are also quite
Yes.
susceptible to leaf scorch,
Oh, yes.
because they're not used to, they really shouldn't be grown down here on the flats. It's
Yep.
not where they want to be. And they will always be more prone to problems than many other trees. Bless your little
Absolutely.
hearts. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're out of their range. They're out
Yeah.
of their natural range.
Yeah.
That's
They
the
will
key.
never look or color up the way they do in the mountains when they're grown at lower elevations.
No, absolutely
No.
not. Go out and
Yeah.
get a Tataryn maple.
There you go. There you go. And
You know?
remember too, for your listeners, if you have, not to get too far into the details here, but if you have a tree or shrub, actually any plant that is in a microclimate that is especially hot, whether it's a reflective fa west facing brick wall or fence, that is adding to the water demands of that tree or shrub. So just keep that in mind when you're placing your plants, when you're placing your trees and shrubs, how far away are they from, that south, especially west facing brick walls are just notoriously tough, on plants. So it may not be the soil, it may not be the tree, it may be where it's growing,
Well,
and what.
that's all about the right plant, right place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole picture. It's all about the big picture.
Yeah. And I know CSU has that lab. I think all many of the counties have. I know we have one in Jeffco, Jefferson County here, where you can take your plants in and samples
Right.
and have them looked at. But at the very least, people could take pictures. We all have our little, attached at the hip cell phones. Take some good, and from my TV days, they always say take a wide shot and then get at me a close-up tight shot so I can see where it's growing and exactly what it looks like. And that tells the diagnostician, oh, I see what you see. I get it. And
Yeah.
here's this brick wall, and that could be a factor. Whereas if you only took a picture of the little struggling leaf, you wouldn't see this, dark brick wall blasting the heat out next to it. So a variety of shots, and they could send them in, and I'm sure the master gardener offices throughout the state could help with that.
Or it's like clients that send a picture in and they do, the whole environment because they say, stand back, take a picture of
Yeah.
more than. And then and they say, I don't know what's wrong with my tree. And then you look at the grass and it's dried up, what can I say?
Yeah.
They don't think about it that way. Maybe don't think about how often or how much that tree needs. And trees can take up to 7 years to actually acclimate in this state.
Yeah. It is expensive. I know water is expensive. I get that totally. But taking down trees is expensive too. And
Yeah.
if you're going to have turf in your yard, water deeply, less frequently, and that applies to pretty much all the plants in our Colorado landscapes. Get that water down. Don't be giving it sips of water. So as an example, if you water deeply on Monday, you don't have to water necessarily on Wednesday. You had that good deep watering, and those deep, healthy roots are going to withstand a drought condition better anyway. So deeply, less frequently. And just as a footnote, something that we run into, and you were just talking about your 2 inches of snow. Still, I'm not jealous. I'm nice, trying to play nice.
You mean water? You mean water?
Water. Oh, yeah. Water. Water. Yeah. A little early for the snow. But the point is, if you get 3 or 4 inches of snow, that almost doesn't count.
No.
If you get a foot of soggy snow, yay and good for you, and you can skip your winter watering for that round. But yeah, it's, don't depend on those little bitlets of snow that we get. Even if it's 2 inches of really wet snow, it's something you have to shovel maybe, but it's not going to benefit your plants that much.
Yeah, it takes more snow, and the moisture content in it is the important part. In 12 inches of snow, yes, you could get an inch of precip, but
If you're
not
lucky.
yet, but not all the time. So, there are formulas out there, but you have to remember, like you're saying, it's that amount of moisture that comes with it.
And when back in my TV days, I would go on snowpack surveys and we'd snowshoe into whatever the snow course, the usually Denver Water Board would establish, and they'd take a tube insert it into the snow. And these were up in higher snowfall places. So, you could come out with a, it wasn't the depth, it was the weight. They'd take that tube and then they'd weigh it and see how much it weighed minus the weight of the tube. It's the water content. If you get a foot of powder snow, forget about it. Colorado powder is something for the skiers. It's not something for the gardeners. But yeah, it's something to keep your eyes out for because we love our landscapes. If you're going to have them, you might as well take care of them.
They take quite a bit of maintenance, but the lawn takes the most maintenance of any thing in your landscape.
Certainly takes more water on average, in terms of outdoor water use. And I think the psyche that we're seeing at Tagawa's, and I'm guessing you're seeing it too, is there are people who say absolutely no turf. Turf is useless. Well, if you have kids, do you have dogs, have the turf that you will use. Don't have, the lawn of Versailles just because you're from the East and it's what you expect. Have usable lawn so you can play a game, a little tag football or whatever, but don't have more than you need, than you will actually use. And that seems to be a reasonable middle ground for now, on how to, we at Tagawa generally advise people to think in terms of their turf. And if you want to pour it out, take it out, plant in your vegetable garden in the front yard, go for it. But it's, nobody's
Absolutely.
suggesting you have to have a backyard or front yard of all gravel. Well, some people are, but we generally don't. But, and it's cooling, it sequesters carbon. So there are good sides to lawn, but don't have more than you actually, that services you and your lifestyle and your kids, your dogs.
Well, and it provides oxygen too.
Yep.
Lawn,
Yeah. Yeah,
so
exactly.
and the healthier you keep it, the better off.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But
But
yeah.
seasons are a changing.
Lawns can scorch too. Well, the price of water, it's about cost. And so we need to think about drought tolerant trees.
Yeah.
And
I bet CSU has a handout on that.
it's buried in the types of trees that we have for Colorado, but Plant Select is doing some research and breeding and wanting to bring trees from, Oklahoma and Texas up into Colorado because, in the next 20 years, what's our precipitation going to be like? But then here we are in where I am in Colorado, northern Colorado, and this is not a typical August. This is I don't know what's going on
The
because,
inches of rain, yeah.
well, we've we but before that we had three,
Inches of rain.
And we had a small period of about 4 or 5 days with nothing, and then the faucet got turned on again, and then it got turned off a couple more days, and then turned on again. And this whole week, I mean, starting with Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, and here it is Monday, and it rained again overnight.
Is that driving the farmers nuts who are trying to harvest?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's not good for crops. I mean, with this much humidity and moisture, it brings in fungal issues, and that's not good.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Anyway,
That's a podcast for another day.
yeah, you can't have it all, but it certainly is a different dynamic, because we've gone through summers where you get to June and it's 100 degrees and it stays that way through August.
It feels
And
like this is what it's done here on the Front Range. It's just 90 is normal,
here, that's not been the case. We've had maybe 300 or 400 degree days and then back down. And we're going to spend the next 2 weeks in the 70s and 80s.
Go figure. But if you garden proactively, If you anticipate problems, deep and frequent watering, keeping your lawnmower blade sharp, there are so many ways that you can help your landscape reduce its stress and be more vigorous, more robust to deal with the things that Mother Nature's dishing out.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's why I always say, look at the big picture. Try to figure out, anticipate what's coming, like you're saying, and then go out there and give that tree additional water before we have that extended drought so that it can get through it. And like winter watering before the ground freezes. And even in the spring, if the winter has been, if you didn't water and March is excessively dry, then you still have an opportunity.
It's gardening in Colorado is very interesting, and I was born and raised here, so I have never gardened anyplace else. But when I teach classes, I always ask people to raise their hand if they grew up someplace that had really great soil. And then I tell them, it's okay, I'll let you stay in class. Because you're still welcome here. You're still welcome here.
How nice of you.
Exactly. But it's always great to see you, always great to talk about some new gardening topic. And I'm glad that we were able to find a day for some leaf scorch conversation.
Yeah. So when the temperatures start heating up in summer, people need to think about, and adding organic matter long before that can help actually help the water infiltrate.
And I'm a big fan of a really good aeration. I do it spring and fall before the heat sets in. And that just helps the grassroots. But you've got a lot of tree roots under grassroots, and if you want to get some oxygen or help, it's not going to do the job, but help get some oxygen in there, help to open up that soil, help that water to penetrate. I'm a diehard rototiller spring and fall.
Well, CSU
Not
Pro
rototiller, not rototiller,
aerator,
aerator.
aerator,
Oof, got myself.
yeah. So, CSU Forest Service has a slide that when Donna Davis was here as the education coordinator on the East, we put into a presentation, and you could see how when you don't have any grass around your tree and you leave that tree ring open, the development of the tree's roots are further developed than if you had grass as a cover.
So what would you say, 2 feet away from the trunk of the tree for the nearest grass?
Oh, I'd go further than that. I mean,
Three?
actually out to the invisible tree
Drip
ring.
line? Wow.
Drip line, yeah. And so but that isn't an attractive thing necessarily to a lot of people. So
Do the best we can
yep.
to educate and inform and encourage.
Yep. Well, thank you, Luann, for joining me.
Most welcome, most welcome.
Until next time, thank you to the audience for listening. Tune in next time when we get to the heart of the matter on another horticultural topic.